Easy, yeah. It makes me
wanna. KECI.
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 KECI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KECI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.
All right, well, welcome to today's show here at Get Notified. You're listening to me, Ryan Fulland, DJ Ginger MC, and you are listening to it on KUCI. Make sure to give us some love on Twitter. That's at KUCI FM, and Instagram, and Tumblr, and Facebook. And I'll be live tweeting from the show today, and you can get me at Ryan Fulland. So, ladies and gentlemen, today is a special day. You know when you have those aha moments and you wake up or you're in the shower or something happens, you're like, aha, I've got it. Well, today I have Mitchell Levy, who is the aha guy from Aha That. Welcome to the show, Mitchell. How are you, sir?
Great to be here. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, well, so what is up with this aha-ness? If you were to say aha that, what does that mean and where did this all start?
Well, what an open-ended question.
Well, wait. Maybe I should just ask, you know, when was your aha moment to be the aha guy for Aha That?
Ooh, even slightly better question. And we have lots of ahas here. You know, it's interesting when people think about themselves and their branding and who they are and what they do. And so I've had a really nice, diverse career. I've done lots of fun things, and there's tons of accolades. And we always have a hard time figuring out how do we describe ourselves. And we started a book publishing company. I have published over 800 titles. And I decided at some point in time that, okay, I'm going to stop books. We're going to go into consulting. And I went to LinkedIn. I figured out a title I wanted to use. It was called Thought Leader Architect.
Mm.
I thought that was a really cool title. It's similar to the type of work you do. Is we go into corporations, we turn their experts into recognized thought leaders. Shouldn't that be a thought leader architect? I mean,
yeah.
Perfect title. I was the first thought leader architect in the world. Over a two-year period, I've got two or three recommendations. Because it turns out that although it was a cool title, my friends didn't understand what that title meant. And I had a friend in the marketplace who every time I saw him, he'd look at me and go, Mitchell, you're the aha guy. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I kind of rejected the notion of calling myself that for a little bit of time, actually for a couple of years. And one day I kind of woke up and I said, I am. So I changed my title.
I started
telling people about it.
So that
and
was
within 1 week, I had more referrals from my friends because they kind of knew what I was.
As the aha guy. So your aha moment. Your aha moment was that somebody called you the aha guy, and then it just, aha.
It stuck. You know that aha moment. It's that when the light bulb goes off, when you think about the world in a slightly different way. And what I say now, and I'll give you my 7-second soundbite, I am the aha guy from Aha That, and I empower experts and thought leaders to share their genius.
Aha.
There we go.
Yeah, you know what? It should be, what did you call it? Your 7-second something?
Yeah, 7-second soundbite. Yeah.
Yeah, you should somehow turn that into, you know, loop in the aha. So it's your 7 seconds to aha, or I don't know, just trying to weave in the aha-ness.
You know what? I might have at some point in time rejected that comment saying, oh, it doesn't fit. But I'm going to say I will accept and process that and figure out how to make that happen.
Ooh, I like the accept and process because it makes me feel good that you're listening to me. Technically, you can throw it off of the boat if it doesn't work with the process. But then it allows me to keep coming up with dumb ideas and making up stuff along the way. So you've almost opened up this ginger can of worms so that by just saying you will process it, that's a nice way to let somebody feel like you're listening. I like that.
Well, by the way, that's a great comment. So first, let me just say, there are no such things as dumb ideas. There's dumb actions. For instance, any idea is a good idea. And then what happens, and in the business space, here's the most simplest way to test an idea, whether or not it's dumb or not, is see if you can find a customer who wants to pay you for it. So if you have an idea and no one will ever pay you for it, well, then you could actually say if you keep doing it, it's a dumb idea or a dumb action because you keep doing stuff that's not working. But if you vary it up, you may find that opportunity, that nugget, that area where, and here's the perfect world, if you do what you love, you can love doing what you do all the time.
True that. And that's an aha moment once you sort of figure that out. But this idea of a dumb idea is only dumb if people won't pay for it, I love that, because that really opens up the door for being as dumb and creative as you want, because I have seen a lot of products, things, services that may seem dumb to me, but people just gobble it up.
Well, I don't know if you remember way back idea. The biggest dumb idea that made somebody a ton of money was the pet rock. They took a rock, they put it in a box, and millions of rocks were sold.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the rocks, though, they were very, very accurate weather predictors. So it was like, you know, I remember seeing something where it's like, if the rock is wet, it's raining. If the rock is hot, it's hot. If the rock is cold to touch, it's cold. Like, come on.
I don't remember that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So you can take people who come up with ideas such as pet rocks, and you turn them in a construction archetype kind of way to put them into a position of thought leadership. And you do that how?
So here's a oxymoronic statement. Are you ready? Effective books. So the reason I say that is that books are still the most effective, the most compelling way to demonstrate that somebody is an expert at who they are and what they do. It's better in many cases, only because of time to market. It's better than that 3 years and a couple hundred K you're going to pay for your PhD. It is something that says, hey, I'm an expert in my space. Now, couple that with the other side. Books are now a commodity item. There are so many ways to either self-publish or pay somebody to publish, hybrid publishing or traditional publishers. There's anyone who really would like a book in the marketplace, it's easy to do. So looking at that world, what I figured out is how do we do a book? How do we make a book quickly that is both easy to consume and takes a teeny, and I'm talking about teeny, teeny amount of time for the author to actually write. So let me tell you what we do, and then we can poke holes in or take a look at that. We essentially do a two-hour interview. So I will talk with the author, and at the moment it's the I. So I'm still finding enough time to squeeze in these two-hour interviews. And so I'll talk to the author for 2 hours, and I'll pull the genius from their head. And the genius, and we'll talk about what a book is about. Let's put that to the side and come back to that. So I'll pull the genius from their head, and then we have a writing school. We send all of our writers through. Our writers will then ghostwrite both an AHA book and the traditional books that we create. Now, I'll tell you what those are. AHA books are comprised of 140 bite-sized quotes. And then we produce those books in paperback, hardcover, Kindle, PDF, and I also have the AHA That platform with 800,000 users sharing your AHA messages. And what's interesting is 2 hours of the author's time, probably 2 hours of review time. Let's round that up to three. So 5 hours of somebody's time, and now you could have a book that in multiple formats that demonstrates to your prospects that you're the expert at who you are. And so what it comes down to is what are the things that somebody can say if you meet somebody and they reach out their hand and they shake your hand, what is the most immediate thing they could say that doesn't sound like they're selling you anything but tells you that they could solve your problem? Well, I'll give you the example of mine. I did a TED Talk, and I saw that you did a two, which are pretty cool. And my TED Talk's called Being Seen and Being Heard as a Thought Leader. And so I also have a book that I did on the same topic, and it became an international bestseller. So if I'm holding my book in my hand, or if I introduce myself, I can just say, hi, I'm Mitchell Levy, international best-selling author of the book, being seen and being heard as a thought leader. Now, that statement is a pain point that many people have. That statement is the question that you ask. How can you be seen as an expert or be seen as a thought leader? Well, I'm an international bestseller of a book that has that title, Don't You Think I'm the Expert Who Could Solve That Problem? And typically the answer to most people is yes.
I like that. I'm crafting a tweet here, so if anybody's in the Twitterverse, that's where I live. But summing up kind of what you said, what is the most immediate thing you can say, parentheses, that is not selling, that communicates the problem that you solve? According to your Twitter handle, which is @happyabout, which I love, by the way. I'm confused, but that's why I love it. So according to @happyabout, that is where the magic happens. Anyone want to try as a comment? Pretend we meet, we shake hands, then you say ... and we'll see what people say.
Oh, beautiful.
Now, I think I'm going to put a GIF on there to say some sort of like, hi. Okay, there we go. I found one from The Simpsons that works. We're tweeted out. But this is an interesting concept. So you take these instantaneous moments or these interactional moments that are the first pass, and you take those and you come up with 143 of them?
140. So 140 by 140.
Okay.
Typically 140 characters by 140 aha messages. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at an aha book, one way to look at it, we break those aha messages into sections. You know, it's like chapters of a book. If you have a seven-section book, an aha book is comprised of 140 bite-sized quotes, 140 tweets, if you will, or 140, I call them aha messages, and seven blog posts.
Okay, so there's a whole package. So you've got blog posts, you've got sections, you've got these sort of, I guess, verbally tweetable moments that are condensed nuggets that you pull out of people, and then this comprises a book.
Yes.
Okay. I know for a fact that there are people listening, and you know who you are. You have books that you've bought that you have not read. So tell me about how that psychology works into it when you get this normal-sized-looking book and you open it up and it's sort of like a quote book, right? Does that lower the barrier for people to consume the content?
Oh, Ryan, beautiful. Thank you. So, yes. So here's an interesting thing. How sometimes people get so embarrassed because I'll give you a couple examples of my authors. I'll come back to that. So sometimes people get so embarrassed because they're given a book by somebody or they purchase a book, and just because they purchased a book was good enough, because psychologically, sometimes having the book sitting there is good. Then you're feeling a little concerned because you've never read it. And, you know, when a book is 20,000 or 40,000 words, and you know it's going to take you a couple weeks elapsed time or a month or so based on how much time you have for reading, sometimes you just never pick it up. So what's unique about an aha book is simply that the 140 aha messages, any one of them should be enough. Matter of fact, let me give you an example of one. So in the book I did called Being Seen and Being Heard as a Thought Leader, to me, my belief is that thought leaders, 80% of the content they share should be somebody else's. So I've got four other thought leaders who I interviewed and are contributors of the book. I spent 2 hours interviewing other people, and then my team ghostwrote the book. So I'm going to give you an aha message, which is aha number four. And that particular message was written by or spoken by Robert Clancy. Robert's got 500,000 followers on Facebook. And here's his aha message. Good thought leaders are at the top of the mountain. Great thought leaders are at the bottom of the mountain helping people climb up. Right? So when you listen to that, you're like, oh, yeah, what have I done today to help the people who follow me climb up the mountain? What have I done to help people be more successful at what they do? It's an aha message that you're like, oh, if that's the only aha message in my book that you read, I'd be pretty happy about that. What's interesting is I now have 139 other aha messages all designed for you to go, aha, I need to talk to Mitchell Levy. Right? And that's what the book is. If you sat down and read an aha book from beginning to end, typically it's 10 to 20 minutes. And what I say up front, I have a how to read an AHA book. What I say up front is that one of the ways you read it, you could actually sit down and read the whole thing and then mark some of the AHA message you like. Then come back a week later, or even if it takes you a month, come back a month later and read it again. I guarantee it'll be different because every time life moves on and we learn or grow or do something different, those messages that we read, those messages we're exposed to, change slightly, right? And there may be some that are more relevant to you tomorrow than there are today. And so, you know, 10 to 20 minutes to read a book, easy. But here's a powerful thing. When you hand somebody a book and it speaks to the person you're handing it to, i.e., and then we're talking about, if you will, we can talk about the topic a little bit. The topic of the book, the title of your book, is the pain point that your prospect has. That's how you make sure the book speaks to the person that you're talking to. So you hand somebody a book. It is exactly the pain they're in today. It's exactly the pain point they have. They crack it open. They don't need to read more than two or three or four AHA messages. And if they all hit the mark, they may or may not read the rest of the book. They will give you a call. That's the cool part.
That's interesting. And do you think that the psychology or the psyche of the modern day human is more inclined to read less and think more? Or I want a do you think that we are in this Twitter nation or Facebook nation and short little blurts of information? Is that like a direct contrast to historically, the thicker the book, the better? I've got time to sort of dig into this. Yes, give me all the gory details, as opposed to just give it to me real quick. Give it to me because I'm on my way out the door.
So I'm not throwing my parents under the bus by this statement. They don't like an AHA book. They don't like this concept because the type of time when they sit down to read a book or they go and listen to a book, they want countless hours of time to focus on making, because they're both retired. They're both looking for things that consume them time-wise, right? So in the old days, there were so much less opportunities to be consumed by data in different ways. Nowadays, we are bombarded with so much content, whether you call it a Twitter or a Facebook or just a what I say in my TED Talk is we're in the midst of the transformation from the industrial society to the social age. In the social age, we just have the opportunity to be given information, to be able to see data, to be able to be bombarded with opportunity that takes our attention every single second of the day. And so what happens is, and this is where the AHA concept, the AHA book concept comes in, is these are well-curated, well-orchestrated, bite-sized nuggets that give the impression that you're the expert in this space. And what happens, Ryan, is sometimes people go, oh, man, I can't just say what I need to do in a tweet. It's not good enough. And so what's interesting is, first, we'll give them the tweets so they could see it, right? So we'll give them the content so they could see it. And then what I'll say is, hey, look, pick 5 or 10 of those AHA messages that you're excited about. Stand in front of a video camera and do 10 two-minute clips on what this really means to you. Or point to, in your case, point to the two TED Talks that you've done in the past and have that AHA message also incorporate a URL that points to the videos, that points to the homepage, that points to the top of funnel. So what you're doing now, if people want to see more on that particular message that caught their attention, they can either, if they're reading it, they could actually type in the quote. If they're reading it online, they could click on the link and then get brought to a location. You know, if you're selling something, it's top of funnel. And basically at that stage, you're offering lead candy and you bring them down the funnel. If you just want them to get and learn more, you send them to some program, whether it's an audio program like this show, or you send them to your videos. And it's easy to now, when you think about the world in this way, you're thinking about the book as giving them 140 curated messages. Any one of them could close them. What's interesting is those messages are constructed where you can either give more information or it just resonates and sits by itself.
It's an interesting, really, thought process that you're going through, because the core information that's being discussed or explained or shared at the very core, right, this two-hour conversation split up into 140 quotes, a video, a TEDx talk, whatever it may be, individuals have content or messages or ideas or passions that they want to share. And what I'm hearing is that you're being more conscious of how people are consuming it, feeding it to them in small bites, and then allowing them to sort of jump between I'm visualizing here. Have you ever gone to a food truck like park where they have like all the food trucks come in?
Yes.
Okay.
I, all of a sudden you said that and I go, God, I love where you're going with this.
Okay, keep
going.
So if I'm hungry, like that's my goal, is I'm hungry for some interesting content. And when I'm hungry, I don't necessarily know what I want to eat. And if we're making this analogy to hungry for information, I don't know if I'm in the mood for something inspirational. I don't know if I'm in the mood for something thoughtful or sort of like emotional or funny. I just like have this gut in my feeling that I'm hungry for some content, right? And instead of making a commitment to going to, I don't know, El Pollo Loco or El Torito or somewhere for Taco Tuesday, it's like you're allowing people to show up to a food truck park. And it's like, all right, it's almost like you're giving people free samples at anything. And so you're like, la-di-da, I'm hungry for some information. Oh, give me a fry. That's kind of tasty. Oh, give me a taco. That's kind of cool. Wait a minute, squirrel, what's that? And you're kind of playing to this idea of letting people pick and choose, but then once they figure out what they want, then they can dive in, and maybe they can go and see the recipe, and then maybe there's a video around it, and then there's a whole hashtag behind it or something. So is that fair enough? Are you kind of like the food truck park of content consumption?
Well, I loved it till you made that last statement, because I thought, I know you said food park,
okay,
and I heard trailer park.
Food truck.
But holy cow, dude, I love that. Thank you for my aha moment.
Wait. Let's maybe tweak it. What if it's a farmer's market? Right? That's less intimidating, and everybody knows that you get samples. And so you're kind of like the farmer's market of content consumption. You know, try before you buy.
Actually,
give me a little taster.
Here's a very interesting comment. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So depending on who I'm talking to, I could throw in a number of different nouns.
Aha.
Exactly. So, and by the way, this is what's important. So if I'm in front of a group of dairy farmers, for instance,
yes,
then I'm throwing in a different analogy than if I'm in front of a group of dentists or accountants. You know, so what happens is, and this is what the world's all about, is it is your job as the expert, as a thought leader, to deliver your message. Not in the old days, the industrial age, your job was to deliver your message globally to everybody and make it applicable to everyone. And what you would do is you would say jump, and your audience would say how high. Nowadays, you need to speak to the specific audience you're addressing, and you need to suggest that it might make sense for them to jump. They're going to ask you how, you're going to tell them how, and then they can elect to take that step. Because we now have direct interaction with the audience that we're serving, and we need to not just tell them what to do, but we need to make suggestions and show them how to move to the other side. So I am going to tell you, I've got four other interviews today. I'm going to use what you just told me on these other interviews. I may even give you attribution.
Woo! All right, you can definitely throw them over to my Twitter and yeah. Who knows? And that's the thing about this idea of abundance. And I want to get your opinion on it real quick. I know that there's this thought process that like what I have, I it's my expertise, and I don't necessarily want to share. I'm in the sort of the game where it's like it's an abundance theory. And it's like, however much I can help give you as much creative information as I can, like, it all just sort of feeds itself back. And to be able to be mentioned on four other shows that I would have never had a connection with, like, that's just proof in the pudding that it's always valuable to just deliver as much value as you can, because you never know where it's going to go.
Ryan, it's so appropriate for you to make that statement. So I'm in Silicon Valley. I've been here for 30 years. One of the secrets, which is so hard for Silicon Valley, has tried to be replicated in all these other places of the world. And there are three components of Silicon Valley, right? One is there's easy access to capital. Two, there's easy access to super bright, capable people. And three, now this is the piece that's hard to replicate. There are easy access to content and ideas, and those that are inside the companies will openly share what they know, what they've done with anyone, including their competitors, because they care more about the industry growing, not just their company.
Right.
And so the difference between the industrial age, and this is what I talked about in my TED Talk, it's like I said, it's called being seen and being heard as a thought leader. The difference there is, in the old days, we were told who our thought leaders were. So we were told by the record companies, the broadcast media, by the publishers. We were actually told what music we were going to listen to, what actors we were going to see on the big screen and the small screen, and what books we were going to read. And those thought leaders used to say, as I mentioned, they used to say jump, we'd say how high. Nowadays, what happens is your job, if you're in the world, so let's say you're a dentist, but you're an amazing dentist using best practices and you have all the latest equipment. If you don't tell anybody, the only people who are going to see that are your customers, who may actually recognize that. So what's your job? It's just to tell people, use the best practices, or you have the best prices, or whatever your core competence is. And it's your job to help your customers tell their friends, as well as let their neighbors know about the things you're doing. And the more information you could share, it doesn't, like I said, in the old days, people were always afraid that you'd steal their content or do other things. Nowadays, what's important is to share your content, and hopefully they are going to take it and share it. And by the way, that's one of the things that's unique about the Aha That platform. For those that go to ahathat.com, we have 800,000 users today. And more importantly, we have 44,000 Aha messages. And the platform is free to use, free to share, and every message gives attribution back to the author. So if you let me say the phrase, please steal all this content and share it as is, because what's happening is you're sharing good, compelling content to your audience, and you're also sharing the content of the thought leaders that are already inside the platform. Everybody wins. Your audience gets good, compelling content. You have good content to share, and you're being recognized by your audience by sharing other people's content. And the thought leader who originally created, their stuff is getting shared. So it's a win-win-win.
And that's interesting, because that's really the crux of sort of this new information age. You know, I really enjoyed your TEDx talk, and you're basically saying that we're going through the largest transition than we have since the Industrial Revolution, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Industrial Age, think about what it must have been like for society overall, who were living in the country, they were farming their own products, right? So there was somebody who was a dairy farmer. That person may also have been the butcher, right, or the meat producer. Somebody else grew corn. Somebody else grew other vegetables and things to live on and sustain lives. And what happened is, you'd wake up in the morning, people would wake up at 5 a.m., and, you know, when the sun came up, you started working. Around dinner time, when the sun was setting, you stopped working, and you produced your food, but you produced only enough of a particular thing. So what you would do is you would sell whatever it is that you're doing, and you would trade what you were doing with somebody else. We had a real collaborative society. We really... It was a little bit more down on Maslow's hierarchy. It was all about food and shelter. And then what happened is we hit this industrial age, and we're thinking, man, the convenience of the grocery store, where everything's in one spot. And the companies, and you know, and you could even think about, I don't know if I want to say Ford was the company that made this happen, but that industrial line where somebody's job was to screw the tires in and make that work, and that's what they did, and they had ended up with Popeye type arms, right? And we turned into a society that was focused no longer on collaboration and the good of society, but rather producing a product. And the person who won was the person who was the CEO at the top of the company. We're now moving back to the collaborative society that we had back in the agricultural age, except we're doing it with all the benefits that came about through this industrial age. And anyone who wants has a microphone. Anyone who wants to share their expertise can. Now, the thing is, when we first were given the microphone, sort of like, I don't know, for those parents, have you ever had your kid who was 4 or 5 be given a microphone at a store? I know mine did once. Yeah, we were in a Target, and the person thought he was cute, gave him the microphone. What's the first thing a kid sees when they get a microphone? Hey, wow, 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 look at me, I'm cool.
Yeah.
Well, guess what happened when all these experts were given a microphone and they start talking? And actually, a lot of times, and the next time you listen to a radio program or watch somebody on TV, ask yourself, is this person doing what your 5-year-old did? And are they saying, hey, look at me, I'm cool? Because that doesn't go very far. And what has to happen, Ryan, is what you said. That person needs to basically spill their soul and be able to share with their potential audience who they are and how they help. And not just how do I help, but rather give them tools that the person who wants to help themselves can help themselves. And the person who just can't figure out how to do it themselves, they're convinced that they need to hire that person.
Yeah, that's a lot of great info right there. One thing it makes me think about is the new and continuing algorithmic changes to the social media platforms and getting into why they're doing it. And it really ties in, I think, with what you're saying. You are talking about a young individual who has a microphone and just sort of it turns into a broadcast. Ma, 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 look at me. Rah, like, rah, I hear my own self talking. This is amazing, right? This is amazing. The problem that's being faced by these major platforms is that if everyone is just broadcasting, it's just a bunch of noise. It's not relevant. You get enough non-relevant, non-informative information in your feed. What do? You jump platforms. And so these algorithmic changes, like Facebook, for example, everyone has seen their reach reduce. And that's because they're preferring conversations, they're preferring interactions, they're preferring emotional content that's more engaging, that gets people to click like and comment again and comment again. So for those people that are just using this clean up on aisle 3 mentality, your posts are going to get fewer and further between and people won't see it. So now it's not just about the broadcast. It's about having the best hire for the best target audience, that you use the best screws and the most efficient sort of on that conveyor belt so that somebody sees the tire in their feed and like, oh my gosh, I want to comment on this tire. I want to share this tire. The actual social media platforms are gearing themselves to basically filter out all of the 5-year-olds that are broadcasting on a microphone just to hear themselves talk.
Well said. Aha.
Aha. And I'm going to tell you, it's not about leveraging social. It's about having a clear message and using social to amplify it. There's a huge difference. The more we understand about the algorithms and best practices, the more chances our aha moments will spark more ahas.
Well, I love that. And just I just would want to remind you that what you said was beautiful. When people say, God, I'm so mad. I finally figured out Facebook or Google Ads, and then they changed the algorithm. Why do they keep doing that? And if your answer was, it's to stop the 5-year-old by saying, me, 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 that's such a beautiful way to explain it.
And it empowers you to actually think about what you want to say, because if you just have, this might be a stretch here, but if an aha moment is something that makes you think, inspires you, gives you motivation, pumps you up, you know, gives you more empathy and insightfulness, then a moment without the ha is that 5-year-old broadcast, right? Like if you look at a piece of content and you're like,
I'm thinking about that.
Like, so
not everyone can carry that off.
Yeah, there's a lot of ah moments out there. But ask yourself.
There is a lot of ah.
This is the is out there. Now is your last name Levy or Levy? What's the best way?
Levy.
Okay, so maybe we can come up with something called the Levy test, and it's. Read this piece of content, read this book, read this quote, read this tweet, and ask yourself, does it make you go, ah, or does it make you go, aha, or does it make you go, ha, right? Because it's like unentertaining, insightful, and funny. Like, those are kind of the three different things, right?
You know, this is normally what I do. I'm excited to, I think our first conversation, I so enjoyed talking to you. This is for those that are listening. This is what happens when you talk to guys like Ryan and myself. When we focus on you, what our job is to pull out the best of who you are. And so far, I've got these two things. I do this all the time, but you've given me two phenomenal aha moments, right?
Nice.
Which is something that could potentially significantly change what I do going forward. And that's what, by the way, in that two-hour interview, when we do that, that's what we do. Okay, Ryan, do you mind if I talk a little bit about what your book should be about?
Let's do it.
Because I want to fine-tune that notion with the audience.
Let's give people a taste of it. And before we do that, let us know how we can cyberstalk you. Where would we go to do that? And what platform do you want to point people to?
What I'd rather say is my name is Mitchell Levy, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, last name L-E-V-Y. Type in that name in Google. Google spends hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that what pops up, or actually not just Google, but the social media platforms, spends hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that my name and my profiles pop up. So connect to me on the platform that's relevant to you. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Google+. I try to play at the place you play. We have Pinterest as well, but I don't get a lot of comments there in the same way. So LinkedIn's probably for business people the most, Facebook or Twitter. I mean, whatever is the platform that you want to play on, because that's where I want to be at the place that my prospects and customers are playing. And they happen to play on a number of different platforms.
Now, I love that. And I'm actually putting together a tweet because it was tweetable for me. So I might make it like question, where should we find you online? And the answer is going to be, my name is Mitchell Levy. Type that name into Google. That is how to learn more about me. Then connect with me on a channel that you use. I want to play where you play.
Oh, my God.
That's
so
good. Real quick.
Just before, so you know, so this is interesting.
Okay.
When I said at the beginning that I do the two-hour interviews,
yes.
And that and at some point in time, I'm going to create a certification program so we could certify other people to do the interviews. I'm going to be that'll be a bittersweet moment. It means that I'm too busy to do all the interviews myself, but it means that I'll have to give up that piece of the world. Ryan, you're going to be one of the first people I talk to because this is what the interview is involved. It's to see inside somebody's head, inside their genius, and to give them ideas of sharing it in a different way.
I dig it. I can feel it. And sure, as long as it makes sense, we'll make some dollars and we'll pull out some genius for people and throw it into some quotes and then just do it. I tend to think of things in terms of tweets. And I was first upset about the whole change from 140 to 280, but I've accepted it. And it's still a matter of sort of condensing. But just thinking of things in tweets is a really fun way to look at life. Like, how can you condense it? And then that's usually the inspiration for all my stick figure quotes.
That's beautiful.
Okay, so let's not waste too much more time. I want to spend some time to give people insight into this process, because whatever this interview is that you do, if you're out there and you have a startup or you're a student or you're trying to start to create your content strategy, this concept of either interviewing someone or facilitating an interview in a 2-hour chunk, if Mitchell can pull an entire book out of someone, you can do a derivative of that. You can talk to the wall for 10 minutes and you can record yourself and go back and listen intently to find different things. But I want you to sort of explain this process, and then for the listeners, how can you duplicate or manipulate this process to make it work for you? Because a lot of times you say stuff that's amazing, you just don't even know it because you say it.
So I think what happens is you and I are both masters at repurposing content. And what happens many times is people do something, like they'll do a TV show or they'll do a radio show or they'll write a blog and they publish it once and then they go away. Well, that's not exactly how it should work. You can repurpose that content in multiple different formats. As a matter of fact, what's fascinating about an AHA book, you got 140 AHA messages. You can take one of them every day and read it on Facebook Live or any video platform and then comment on it for 2 or 3 minutes. And now you have a new, Facebook Live. And now you have a 140-day editorial calendar. You can take three of them and write some words around it and now have a blog post. So you take three of them on a very focused topic, you write a blog post around it. Now you've got the benefit of not just having a content, not just having an editorial calendar, but you also have the benefit of quoting your, and I'm putting up my double fingers, your book. So you're quoting your book, and if you run an Amazon bestseller campaign, you're quoting your best-selling book, which you then give everyone a link to. And that book is going to, by itself, the title of the book should attract people's attention. So let's talk about what the title of the book should be and what you should talk about. And just so you know, this is no different than any generic marketing campaign. So if you go to our marketing agency, not that we know any marketing agencies on the telephone between you and I.
Right.
So if you go to our marketing agency and you say, listen, I need to hire you. What's the first question you're going to ask, Ryan? It's kind of the, so what are you hiring me for, and who do you want to reach? Who is the audience? And what you're going to try to do is drill down and be as specific. Typically what we say is, who is your customer avatar? Who you're trying to reach, and how do they feel? How do they act? What do they do? In essence, if you could put together a Facebook campaign or a Google Ads campaign, you're trying to target their demographic and psychographics. And so the first thing I ask the same thing, we have in our questionnaire, or our publishing process, and for those that are interested, it's ahathat.com/author. We have a 3-step writing process, ahathat.com/author. We have a 3-step writing process. Step one is a Word document, and it has 4 questions in it. And the first question is the most important. It reads, who is the reader and what are their expectations? What it really says is, who is your prospect and what are their pain points? So what's the problem you're solving for the person that you're interacting with? And that's the core of the interview process. Or if you do this yourself, if you think to yourself, what you have to do, put yourself in the head of the person that you're serving, right? What is their pain point? What are they addressing? Who are they? And go back and read your website or read the things you're doing. And are you addressing their questions? Are you answering their questions? Are you giving them enough information to say, hey, this is the person I need to talk to? Well, that's what we do in the interview process. Largely, my primary focus is when I'm talking with somebody, is who's the person that you're dealing with, who's your customer avatar, and what pain point are you addressing for them? And then during the conversations, if you're talking with your prospect, what are the objections they have? And if they have objections, how do you answer those objections? Because in as simple as a half-hour interview, a conversation like you and I have, we're doing this for an hour. In this hour conversation, if we replay the recorded format, there will be somewhere around 70 to 80 AHA messages. Now, you and I remember the top three or four because that's how the brain works. We don't process everything.
That's why I tweet them them as they come up, right?
Yeah. But what's interesting is if you now listen to the recorded content, and it's very easy ways to hire people to listen to the recorded content. And I'm not talking about this is what many people do, and this is not a book. They do the two-hour conversation, and then they take the transcript and they put that into a book. That is not a book. I mean, it is, but it's not a book that anyone will really want to consume. I'm not going to say it's a horrible way to do it. It's just not as powerful as processing and curating that content and coming up with a bite-sized nuggets that happened in the conversation and then focusing on those nuggets to market your business. And so that's what the two-hour conversation is focused on, or any conversation. If you're working on content, and maybe what should happen, if I'm going to give a bite-sized morsel for your listeners, maybe every Monday morning or every Friday afternoon, you sit down with one of your colleagues and you answer one question. And you spend 15 minutes answering that question, and you record it, and from that you pull 10 or 20 aha messages. And then those are the things you share the next week, or if you're doing it on Monday, those are the aha messages you should share that week. I mean, it's a very simple process. And what we do, which is nice, is our high-end package, we do that two-hour interview, then we produce the book, we then deliver, and just one of the things that we do, we print with color on the inside. So we'll share 100 paperback versions of the book. We'll share 25 hardcover versions. Now, sometimes my authors go, oh, I don't want hardcover. And I said, well, it's just part of the package. When you get your 25, you know, just give them to the people you think are important. I can't tell you how many times they're like, oh, my God, I'm glad you made me do this, Mitchell, because I need to order more hardcover. We then do the Kindle, and typically the Kindle is where we do the bestseller campaign. So for the high-end package, we're actually doing an Amazon bestseller campaign. And then we do a PDF. And PDFs, and you know this as an agency, the PDFs are beautiful lead candy to put at the top of the funnel. And then we do the AHA book, so then you're part of the AHA That platform, and you have a customized URL you can send your fans to be able to read and share your content. And the stuff that they're sharing and they're reading are answers to their questions, are they address their pain points. It's the things that they talk about to their friends and their network all the time. So you're giving them content that they're already talking about because it's already a problem for them. And you're giving them answers and content they could share with their fans. It's a way that they grow their network and then get more convinced that you're the person that could solve their problem, and they need to pay you to help them do that.
That is a great aha moment for people who are like, I don't know what to do and how to create content. Taking one day out of the week, answering a specific question that caters to your target audience, transcribing it, and take that and chop that up into relevant posts over the entire next week. And this idea of sort of pulling your own genius out of your own head, you have to kind of hear yourself to do it. And one thing that came to mind was when you're talking about the books, it's almost like you have to create a book report for the book that you want to write. Right? We all remember these book reports. You sit there and invest and read, what's a classic kids book that we have to read? Like the one with the pigs. Not the pigs, but they were on an island, Boy Scouts stuck. I don't know why this is not coming to me. The Lord of the Flies, thank you. Thank you, The Lord of the Flies, right?
I'm so glad it came to you. It wasn't coming to me.
No, I had our Writers on Writing guest, their whole show is on books, and she came in the window as like, you know, window shopping going, the Ring of the Flies, Lord of the Flies.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So this idea is that, like, you know, you read The Lord of the Flies, whatever your Lord of the Flies is, and then social media and sort of these quotable and aha moments, that's your book report. You go through the information that's in your head, you go through that transcript, and you pull out the information chunks that are relevant to people, and then it's like they're at the food truck stop or at the farmer's market, and it's just enough for them to see if it's something that they'll be interested in reading more. And eventually, they might want to not only read your thoughts, but listen to your radio show, listen to your podcast, follow you, sign up for your newsletter, all because you gave them a little bite-sized sample that otherwise they would not have eaten.
Aha!
Aha! Aha! Oh, man, this is a lot of fun. So we've got, can you believe it's already been an hour? Crazy, right?
You've helped me. Maybe you and I together have gone on a journey or a ride with your audience, and it's fun to visualize. What I do in this sort of thing is I kind of pace back and forth, and I'm a visual thinker. So I'm, as you're speaking, I'm getting these images, and it's just been a beautiful journey.
Awesome. And I agree. And I look at things in series of dots. Everything's mathematics. And the best way to make a line is between two dots. And then if you have another dot, no matter where it is, you can connect those dots. And so I look at our first conversation as an individual dot. Doesn't go anywhere unless there's another dot. Here's another dot. And then we'll have more dots and more dots. And eventually you'll launch this sort of thing where maybe I can help to interview and pull people out of their head. Maybe we have a hybrid version that's a marketing tool to where you get somebody who's on the fence about the book services. You throw them onto whether it's a podcast or even a radio show, and we do an hour fun sort of, whatever your coaching suggests to do from this formatted standpoint. Then afterwards, you deliver them a handful of aha moments. And you're like, you see what happened? Now just imagine if we really did it for you. Who knows?
Aha!
Aha!
Actually, Ryan, that's a really beautiful approach. Because, technically, you've got half the book. It just depends on where you drive the person who you're interviewing, right? So because an hour can produce enough of a half of the book. But what I see is pulling out five or ten aha messages from a single interview. And then going, oh, by the way, this is what you guys talked about. Imagine if you had 140 of these and you had them packaged into a beautiful binder. Imagine what that would do for you and your business.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful thought.
In my World of Speakers podcast, I secretly write down all of the great things that they say, and then we design them into quote cards. So when you get my podcast in full form to share, you also get a zip file of like 10 or 15 quotes that you had no idea you said, and they all look nice.
Mm.
Hey, well, check this out. We got to go, but this is just the second dot in a series of dots, and I'm excited to see it grow. So for all of you who want to learn about how to write a book in a short amount of time, go check out Mitchell Levy online. And I don't know why I've sort of turned this into a rhyme, but it's happened, and that's what's going to be, because for the rest of the day, you'll have to see. All right, a little bit of mystery there.
Is this a normal thing for you to do? Because that was pretty interesting.
Very funny. Funny. That wasn't an ah or an aha. That was just a ha. All
right. It wasn't an ah. It was interesting. And, it was great. Ryan, you are awesome. I'm glad to have pinpointed this second dot. And I've already visualized three or four more and trying to put a map together with you.
Excellent. All right. Sounds good. And everybody check out. There's been some fun tweets going on at Ryan Folland and then at Happy About. Thanks, Mitchell. We'll see you soon, buddy.
Ryan, you're awesome. Thank you.
This has been a fun show. Hopefully you have gotten notified. This is DJ Ginger MC signing out.